Welcome to Nerd Critic, a podcast about movies from the dual perspective of critical nerdiness. My name is CJ.
And I am Jordan. CJ here is our resident nerd.
And Jordan is our studied and credentialed critic.
Very good, CJ.
Thank you. I kind of want to dip into the radio voice a little more.
Yeah.
Because this is just like normal talking voice, right?
Well, yeah. With the intro, it's like the perfect opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I can't just be talking and then suddenly go like this. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, today, CJ, what are we talking about?
I know. This movie is too good to joke with, Jordan.
Oh.
We're talking about Parasite.
I'm so excited to talk about this movie. It's so good.
It's so good.
And honestly, I feel fine joking during this episode because Bong Joon-ho is real good at jokes.
He is really good at jokes.
He's really good at like incredibly funny moments.
He'll like scare you and then make you laugh within seconds of each other.
Yeah, he's very good at doing that. He always has been.
And if you're wondering, you're like, wait a second, this is an off-the-shelf episode, but Parasite isn't on the shelf. It is because it is still in theaters. It made kind of a resurgence when it was nominated for a bunch of Oscars, Best Picture probably being the reason it's there again. But we are trying to cover our bases when it comes to the Oscar nominations and specifically Best Picture. We won't cover all of them, but I think almost all of them. We will eventually get to The Irishman.
Mm-hmm, we will.
But outside of that, we might have, I'm going through them in my head, I think we've covered all of them.
I think we've covered all of them except for The Irishman.
So that's why it's an off-the-shelf episode. We're gearing up for the Oscars. Hopefully you've seen this movie. If you haven't, stop listening. More so than most movies, if you haven't seen Parasite and you have any interest at all in seeing Parasite, which you should, stop listening. Go see it. Come back and listen.
Yes, absolutely. I don't feel like we're going to be doing a lot of spoiler-free stuff in this episode because why? it's a movie that everyone should see. Like everybody should just see this movie. I don't feel like I want to try to convince you. Here's all the reasons.
Yes, and it's not a movie to throw on in the background. It's not like a lighthearted Sunday afternoon kind of movie. This is a sit down for movie night. Watch it. You're gonna have to read some subtitles. Get over it, and really immerse yourself because it'll take you away.
The only thing I'll say about this not being about this in the sort of my last pitch for see this movie if you haven't seen it yet, without spoiling anything, is that it's just way more entertaining than you expect. This is not an eat your vegetables movie. This is not like, oh, you gotta
a
granola bar and like settle in. Like you really like you're gonna have a great time.
Yeah,
this is a really fun movie to watch.
There's a lot of movies out there that are like, hey, it's nominated for Best Picture. You should go see it because it's an auteur perspective on today's society and the blah 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 blah. I don't like those movies. I do like those movies, but I'm not going to recommend those movies as strongly as I'll recommend this one. You will have a good time.
Yes.
And
feel free to give us a one-star review if you don't. Anyway. All right. So.
Guys, it wasn't that funny, but his face was that funny. I apologize. That cough just ruined my laugh.
I apologize.
It stole the laugh from me.
No, it's fine. I feel like you still own it.
That was funny, dude. That was funny.
Thank you. So let's start nerding. Spoilers from here on out. I'm going to just be telling you guys everything about this movie because it was great, and I just want to talk about it. I want to talk, first of all, about the process of the Kims all getting to be employed by the Parks and how cool and funny that was from the beginning. CJ, what did you think about that?
I love that. Now, what was interesting to me was that, you tell me, was it communicated that was the initial plan, or was it like... The son got the job and then saw the opportunity.
Yeah, you see those opportunities. Yeah, they were all just totally opportunistic. And I loved how I think it was she was called Jessica, But Ki Jung, Kim, the daughter, basically...
the poor daughter.
Yeah. The way that she just so masterfully manipulated...
she does kind of feel like the brains behind the operation.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And the way that she manipulated the wife, the mother, into believing that she was the sort of savior of her son.
Yeah.
That she could do anything and that she alone understood like how it was so perfect. And speaking of like the comedy and the entertainment value, like her machinations throughout the whole thing were just impossibly fun to watch.
Yeah. Like you see this little corner right here, that's called the schizophrenic area. And you can see that it's really scrambled. And then the mother looks up, that one's the same way! Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And then the whole plot to get rid of the housekeeper.
Oh, man. It's really quite heartbreaking.
It's awful and so funny and so terrible. Yeah. It's like this is that thing where you're vacillating between like feeling awful and like just laughing because you can't help yourself because it's hilarious.
Yeah. And I mean, even the way they got rid of the driver, like she just... You know.
Oh yeah.
Plants a little seed in the car, and then
just a little present to be found later.
Yeah, and then the conversation that they have, like why in the back seat, like why, and it's just like the it's just all of the dialogue around it is just it's
golden.
Just really entertaining.
It's golden.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
Which you feel like if this family is that talented to be able to pull off like all of these intricate manipulations, why are they? You know, in why are they?
Oh,
is that getting into it? Is that getting into it? You know what?
Yes,
I'm gonna pose that question. Okay, here's the question.
Okay,
and it yeah, okay, you have a family.
Uh-huh.
This family so it starts with the daughter Jessica using Photoshop to forge a college acceptance letter, a college degree, which isn't easy, but she has those skills. And then the kid goes and is a really good tutor.
Yeah.
And is like, no, he tells the rich daughter, I don't care if number 24 is hard. You have to gain momentum. You have to go. You have to power through it. It's like really kind of a powerful moment. And then you get Jessica to come in and is just able to BS and manipulate the crap out of this mother. And then they orchestrate all of these moments to be able to get the driver and the housekeeper fired. And the housekeeper was not easy, right? They had to find out that she was allergic to peaches. And then they had to time things so that right when the mother walks in, the housekeeper's coughing. And then they throw some hot sauce on it and it looks like blood. Like,
she has tuberculosis.
Yeah.
Which is a dangerous disease.
Yeah. And so they, yeah, anyway. And then they somehow, anyway, it's just, it, they're, it's pretty ingenious.
Yeah.
And you have all four of them. Yeah. Why do they have no money at all?
Okay. Before we get into that.
Okay.
I want to talk about my favorite sequence in the movie.
Okay.
Which starts with them. So it's a long sequence because if you track it from beginning to end, it really starts with the parks going away for the camping trip.
Oh my gosh.
And the Kims are, you already know.
Yeah, my heart is beating faster just thinking about it.
And the Kims are all gathered in that incredibly iconic living room with that beautiful, like, wall-to-wall glass window. And which itself is this whole, like, this rich tapestry of metaphors all the way through. But anyway, so they're having this sort of, like, night of revelry where they're just drinking and eating stuff and just hanging out and talking and kind of bad-mouthing the parks and just all kinds of just and you're getting to see them sort of like the let it all hang out moment, right? They're doing all this stuff. And then of course the parks come home early, so then there's this incredibly tense rushed sequence of them all, you know, trying to get everything taken care of, and then they wind up under the table.
Yeah.
While the parks are sitting in the couch, and there's that whole sequence. And then that from there, like, which the tension starts to rise when they're all hanging out in the living room, because you know that, like, at any moment maybe these guys could come back and they may be screwed. Like, so that possibility is in your mind, and then when it comes into fruition, it starts to tension, and then they're under the table and it doesn't get let up, and then they stay there until eventually the couple is asleep, and then they have to sneak out. But when they're sneaking out, it's like raining. And so then they have to sneak out in the rain, and then they're all as a family walking away from the house, down the hill, descending from this sort of house on the hill, this rich house on the hill, down into the slums, essentially.
Yeah.
To find that this rainstorm, which is so beautiful up at this rich house, is actually wrought devastation to their neighborhood, and everything is flooded to the point that they are literally now homeless.
Yeah. And it's flooded. It's not just flooded. It's sewage water.
It's sewage water.
Their toilet was exploding.
Yeah, their toilet is geysering into their house, and their house is literally filling with flood and sewage water. And so they have to salvage some things and then leave, and then they wind up sleeping in essentially it's like a giant gym, and it looks like a refugee camp at that point.
Yeah.
And they're all sleeping in the, I mean, it is. It's your worst nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're anybody, it's a thing that, like, looks like one of the worst things that could happen to you and your family. If you're poor, it's a real and present danger.
Yeah.
Like, it's like this. Like, if things just go a little bit wrong, we could be sleeping in a giant building next to a bunch of other people.
Yeah.
Like, and in this case, things go desperately wrong. And then, but what happens? Next day, they gotta be back at work.
Yeah.
So then so that whole sequence of them descending down into, like, that from the Parks leaving on a trip to all the way to them falling asleep in this place is, to me, the most symbolic. Like, that's the clearest physical way to represent the chasm, the unbreachable chasm between the Parks and the Kims.
Yeah. I mean, it's it is. So the thing that you brushed over in illustrating that was, so for me, it's kind of broken up into three classes of people. You have the Parks, who are the 2%, right? They're like not just upper class. They're like upper class. Yeah. Up there.
These guys are the 1%.
Yeah, the 1%. Yeah. And then you have the Kims.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have, in the midst of this, we are celebrating, the Parks are gone camping and we're just eating our stuff and all is well. You have this, the old housekeeper that they framed for having TB comes home or comes back, gets inside, and is, for the most intense, like, if there's ever a movie that is unpredictable, it is this movie. And it's not unpredictable in, like, an M. Night Shyamalan kind of way, where it's like, oh, there's a huge twist at the end. It's just like everything that happens is like, I didn't think that was going to happen. Like, I didn't. And what happens is this housekeeper comes home. And again, guys, if you haven't seen this movie, this is the moment. Like, just go away. And she opens this secret door and runs down a cement staircase hallway thing yelling, honey.
Yeah.
Honey, honey. And you're just, your mind is like, what is possibly going on right now? I have no idea. Because the movie's called Parasite, right? And you have the Kim family that is getting people fired, and your mind's like, oh, they're just going to take over the house and they're going to be a parasite that grew from within. But then you're introduced to this other class, this third kind of class of person, which the way that I saw it was, you have the Kims that are poor, trying to make it work, but are poor, and, like, just bad things happen to them, and whatever the reason is, they just are in a cycle of always being poor. Then you have the Parks, who have made it 1%, and then you have this other couple who has, in my opinion, I can see it argued other ways, but in my opinion, they are the parasite. They are the ones that have attached themselves. They're the leeches to the Park family and are living off of the Park family without the Park family even knowing about it. And so you have these three classes of people that are all just trying to look after themselves. And part of the intensity of the Kims and the Parks coming home and the Kims freaking out about it is that they are trying to contain these two very insane people. And they are just, they have to get them downstairs, to get them tied up. And like, it's just so uncomfortable the whole time.
So I think I have to push back a little bit here. Because you've classified them into two different or three different classes of people. I think there's really in this movie. I think there's basically just two.
Okay.
Because my argument would be that the housekeeper and her husband are the same as the Kims. They're okay. The same.
Okay.
The difference is that when the Kims came, they kicked the housekeeper out. So essentially, it was a dog eat dog scenario. Sure. Right. So they were saying, you know, we want this job, and so we're going to kick you out. But it turns out that she had set up a situation where she could be sort of parasitical. She and her husband could be parasitical to the Park family, and then they get that like one set of parasites gets kicked out by another, basically. But the real interesting thing to me here is that nobody gets to just be the parasite in this movie. Because the Parks are also parasites to the Kims. Like, the Parks are also exploiting the Kims for everything, right?
Like, they're making them do everything for them?
Yeah. It's the same... So in this scenario that we've sort of accepted, if you accept the situation of this movie, the cultural situation of this movie, you have essentially a master class and a servant class, right? You have the rich people and the poor people, and the poor people are the servants of the rich people. Okay. That's what you're seeing, right?
Sure.
It's like, yeah, I get it. That makes sense. Yeah, you got the tutor, you got the art teacher, you got the housekeeper, you got the driver. Like, it's the servant class. The fact that they're all the same family is the sort of unique conceit of this movie, but it sort of it powerfully illustrates this point that the Kims are locked into these roles. Like, there's no way they can pull themselves out of this. There's no way that they can make enough money that they can finally become the Parks.
Sure.
And like, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And then the Parks are only able to do what they do and be who they are because they've outsourced so much of their stuff to other people.
Like, okay.
They've outsourced the parenting of their children.
Yeah, yeah.
They've outsourced their transportation. They've outsourced the keeping of their home.
To the point that maybe the wife of the home had, like, she can't cook, she can't clean.
She can't do anything.
She's very naive.
She has no idea how to run a household.
Yeah, yeah.
She doesn't need to because she's got other people to do it for her. So it's you could call it symbiotic would be the positive spin, right? But it's not. It's both of these classes of people are being irreparably humanly damaged by the relationship.
Okay.
They're all worse off for what's happening. So I think that obviously, like, this the two-dimensional surface of it is, yeah, the Kim family is a parasite that comes in to leech off of the Park family. But that's the simplest way to look at it. Because if you pull back and look at them all as human beings, you realize that it does go both ways.
Got it. So the way that I saw it, so I can totally see that and I can absolutely understand that. The way, if I'm breaking it up in my head and if I'm looking at it as a conversation about class and like it becomes a political conversation at that point, right?
But this movie is deeply a political
conversation. So the political conversation for me, the way that I saw it was the three cat classes of people are the 1% in the Parks, the working lower class, and then the welfare lower class,
yeah.
Right? And the fact that you have the Kims that I'm trying to figure out how to be more tactful in the way that I say it. But I apologize if it does not come across as extremely tactful. But you have the rich people. You have the people that somewhat turn to a lower class that they're questionable in their actions, right? Like the Kims come in and like lie and cheat and steal to get what they want. And then you have the welfare people. And then there becomes although the rich people are not intentionally and directly mistreating the lower class. They are willingly blind to what's going on.
Yeah. Well, right? And it also it crosses that bridge because the relationship is totally dehumanizing to the Kims. Right?
Like, yes.
You get repeatedly these very subtle and then less and less subtle as the story goes on, references that, like, well, we own you.
Yeah.
You have to do all the things that we say because mm-hmm. we own you. Mm-hmm. Like, we're paying you, so therefore you have to do all this. And that sort of, it's so the harm very much goes both ways. And the thing that you're kind of, that it's important to not leave out when talking about how the Kims get to where they get, is that if you put yourself in their shoes, you would hope you'd be able to do all the same things that they
totally.
Did.
Totally.
It's like, it's the, all the things that the father is always saying. He's like, when they're all having dinner and he's like, we're so lucky.
Yeah.
We're so lucky that we have this situation because all these people we know around us don't have work mm-hmm. and can't eat because they don't have work, but mm-hmm. we have work. Look at us. We're all employed. This is amazing. Yeah. How amazing is it that we're all employed? And like, he's like, you know, effusing this gratitude because by comparison, they're doing so well because unemployment is such a huge issue for everyone around them.
Well, and then you had the conversation between Jessica and Mr. Kim, where mm-hmm. Mr. Kim's like, you know, like the driver's like, he's young, right? He's young, he's strapping, he's a good driver. He'll probably find work. Trying to like dismiss somewhat of that guilt.
Yeah.
And then Jessica hops in and is like, don't even worry about him. You should worry about me, your daughter. Worry about us. This is, you have to focus on us.
Which is how, and this is the thing that I found to be the most striking when they discover the hidden husband in the basement.
Yeah.
That whole scene, it's so ugly. It's so ugly and tragic and horrific because these people are the same and they know it. They know it. They know that, like, it's that there but for the grace of God go I, you know? It's like, I know that if things were just a little different, I would be in that exact same situation, but there is zero sympathy or charity because it's survival.
Yeah.
It's survival. And so, there's this incredibly adroit line earlier in the movie when the mother says, something about if I were rich, I would be really kind too.
Probably more kind.
Yeah. I would be even more kind.
Yeah, yeah.
There's this sense of, and you know, and so we can sit in the theater and eating our popcorn and be all judgmental.
Sure.
And be like, oh yeah, like, you know, like you blame it on your poverty. Like you're just a bad person. But like the reality, like that's the reality.
Yeah.
It's very hard to be generous when you have nothing.
Yeah.
It's very hard to be generous when you don't know whether or not you'll be able to eat. And these guys have been raising two kids to adulthood.
Yeah.
So these guys have been not only familiar with poverty, but familiar with the sensation of, I don't know if I'm going to be able to feed my kids. And that will make you close off.
Yeah.
Like, I need to protect me and my own, and that's it.
Yeah. So let me ask you why Mr. Kim snaps at the end. Why does he...
Shame.
Yeah. Okay.
It's shame. It's the breaking point of the direct dehumanizing that he's been suffering at the hands of Mr. Park. So all of this story has happened to him. He's seen all of the horror. He's seen all of the things that have gone on. His daughter just got stabbed, and Mr. Park is demanding help for his family.
Yeah.
And in the process, holding his nose.
Yeah.
It's not bearable for him anymore. It's like you've gotten this impression throughout the whole thing that it's always painful. It's always painful to realize that you're the one, now and forever, who is going to just have to just do what you're told because that's your job and you need this paycheck. And so you have to not only be obedient, but you have to make it seem like you're eager. You have to make it seem like everything is just fine. Like mm-hmm. you have to make, in to the best of your ability, you have to make this person's life perfect, or else you'll be out on your ass.
Yeah.
And like that humiliation, like haunting him all the way through the story, and then piled on that humiliation, the contempt that yeah. The very person that's paying your bill has for you.
The desperate frustration. Yeah. So,
and so holding his dying and dead daughter and then having that happen, I think it's just you can't – like he's going to have to kill him.
Yeah. So that moment for me was definitely the most powerful because what I got throughout the entire thing was that the director, Bong Joon-ho mm-hmm. – Bong Joon-ho, mm-hmm. he sets this action up, this facial expression up of you don't smell good, which is obviously
disgust.
Which
it's
is
disgust.
It's disgust, and it is something that so if you have ever, I think everybody at some point in their lives, not I think, I know everybody at some point in their lives has felt judged by somebody else.
Sure.
And the reason that that's frustrating is that the person that's judging you, if you're frustrated because of it, it's because that person doesn't know the circumstance. They don't know the situation that I'm in. So we've set up that this face of disgust of the smell is the judgment. It's the immediate I judge you kind of – it's the signifier of judgment, right? And so – The reason that he snaps is because he was having a great night the night before. He was having such a good night and he was so grateful and he was eating all of the food and he was sitting in front of this beautiful window with a rainstorm coming down and just greenery everywhere with his entire family. And he finally was like getting a taste of everything that he wanted. And then because Mr. Park is coming home, he is no longer allowed that. Mr. Park replaces him and takes that away from him. And then not only that, he has to go down, like you said, into the slums, into his own house that is being destroyed by sewage water. And he's swimming around in it. So you know, and then he's placed in a gym. There's no shower. There's no hygiene. So you know that he found some clothes that were thrown on the ground that were just in a pile that he was able to put on. And then earlier that day, in that morning, the next morning, he's called into work, which he was not supposed to work. It was the kid's birthday party, and it was just spur of the moment. So he goes to work, and then the madam, the rich mother, makes that face of disgust. Now, Mr. Kim was just swimming in sewage water because he's now homeless. And she can't handle the smell of him. So there's that judgment. Mm-hmm. And there's Mr. Kim understanding, like thinking, you don't get it. You don't know me. And so in that moment, in the moment that his daughter is stabbed and Mr. Park is like, throw me the keys. Mr. Park doesn't know that that's his daughter. To be fair to Mr. Park, he doesn't know. They hadn't said that hadn't been revealed. And so he doesn't want to, and then he throws the keys. And Mr. Park is frustrated that the keys fell under this guy. And then Mr. Park goes to pick up the keys, smells the same smell of poverty on the guy that has been living in the basement, and makes the disgusted face. Mm-hmm. His daughter is dead. He's definitely lost his job, and Mr. Park made that disgusted face. It's over. It is done.
Yeah.
Of course he snaps.
Yes, of course.
Right? And so for me, it was the most clear and like the message that I took away from it. It's so simple. I feel like I'm oversimplifying it when I say the message is don't judge people. But like it was this really significant moment of you have no you can't look at a lower class or an upper class and assume anything. Like there's this entire movie is showing that everybody is the same and will do what they need to survive no matter what class they are. A father is a father. A father's going to do their best to protect their children. They're going to do everything that they can. And so there's no reason. There's no justification. There's no human excuse to throw judgment on them and to make that disgusted face.
That's really good, really powerful.
Thank you.
The face of disgust, the face of contempt. So I've been doing a little. I've been listening to some other podcasts about various and sundry things. And one of the topics that has come up a few times is this, the facial expression of disgust is universal. It's one of the basic universal human emotions. And it has been cataloged, or people are coming to identify it as one of the more dangerous human emotions, contempt or disgust. Because when you find something disgusting, if something disgusts you, or if a person disgusts you, that person is immediately dehumanized. Mm-hmm. Like, you think of that person as not only not human, but as needing to be gotten rid of.
Yeah.
Like, you want to cleanse. Like, you want to get rid of that person. You want to destroy that person. Disgust is an incredibly powerful emotion. There was, going back to that incredibly, overutilized, the story of the Nazis was a story of disgust. Mm. The way that the fascist Germany weaponized the notion of disgust against an entire race of people. This is how genocide always happens.
Yeah.
You inspire disgust for
it's racism of people. Yeah. In general.
It's racism. It's any kind of anything where the other becomes something so awful to you that you feel disgusted by them is the moment when the worst human atrocities become possible. Which is, it's interesting in this moment, in this movie, that sensation of that human emotion, of that disgust, triggers sort of an atrocious act in reverse. Mm-hmm. So it's not that, it's almost like the atrocity has been happening all along. And the moment when Mr. Kim kills Mr. Park, it's the reaction to the atrocity. It's the vengeance for what has already the atrocity that's already been enacted, which is this which was to so deeply demean him anyway. So yeah, it's a. I'm not adding anything to what you said. It really, you said it all. It's fantastic. I think the one of the last things that I wanted to hit in terms of like this theme that this film is exploring, and I love what you said, like, if there's one thing to take away is that you can never judge someone else. Like, you aren't allowed because you don't know. But the tragedy of this film is that you see that there's the situation, while horrific, also seems totally inevitable. Like, this problem of poverty, this problem of class division seems inevitable. It's like, how are the Parks not going to be rich?
Yeah.
And how are the Kims ever not going to be poor? And what's more, how are anyone like the Kims not going to be poor? Like, how is all of these people who fill the city, how are they ever going to not be desperate?
Yeah.
And you get the sense, and the reason the storm was so emotionally powerful for me was that it feels powerfully environmental. This isn't something that is someone's fault.
Yeah.
It's like, no, there's not a person we can blame for this. There's not like a, oh, well, if so-and-so hadn't, whatever, if this president hadn't made this policy or what, there's no one to blame. It's not the Park's fault. It's the weather, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the rain comes down
and
forces them all into deeper poverty. It's just this, it feels elemental that there's this enormous class division. And so if Bong Joon-ho is thinking that, if Bong Joon-ho is constructing this story for the purpose of communicating this idea or this texture of environment, this theme, then he's thinking, the weather's not going to help you. And there's not a person, there's not someone else that's going to help you. We have to find a way to help these people.
Yeah.
Like, there's no one else.
Yeah, it's
they can't help themselves out of it.
Yeah.
Like, they can't just work harder. and get another job.
Yeah.
Like, that's not going to fix the problem.
I remember hearing a comedian once say he's like, you guys got to stop judging homeless people and telling homeless people to just go get a job. There's been like one homeless dude who walked into a place and got a job, and it was such a big deal they made a movie out of it. And he was played by Will Smith. Right? So it's like this – and it's this – like in this movie, you have in Parasite, you have pretty much like every – not every, but a lot of stereotypical personality types that are shown here, right? You have like the naive mother who is – can be taken advantage of. The rich, naive mother can be taken advantage of. You have the very judgmental and disgust kind of driven rich dude. You have the poor mother that is very hardened, right? Like she just brags on her husband, like, man, he can't do anything. And then she backs it up, right? She's the dude, she's the person that kills the guy that was in the basement. She also killed the other woman by kicking her down the stairs.
Oh my gosh, that scene, by the way.
Man,
balletic,
yes,
hilarious, horrific,
yes. And so she backs that up. You have Mr. Kim, who like is just honest, just an honest guy that's just trying to, and he feels bad for like getting the other guy fired, but he's just, so you have these kind of different personality types that are portrayed, and you have like the poor mother kind of blames the Parks for being rich.
Yeah.
She's like, she's kind of bitter about it.
It's resentment. It's the resentment of the poor.
But the Parks aren't doing anything wrong being rich. The Kims, you don't blame for doing what they can to get those jobs. The other people, you don't blame for like living, like the debtors. She's obviously gotten beaten by the people that she owes money to, but she can't do anything about it. So she runs and hides. Like you can't blame them. And so you have these classes of people that like, it seems like I can understand every political position of like, of more welfare, tax the rich people more, like they all make sense, like all of them, like you can see every side when you watch this movie of like, I can see it from their point of view, but like the Parks, like it's their money, but they need to help with or else it's going to be bad. And it's such a clear picture of the problem that we have. It's not really presenting an answer.
No, I don't know if there is one.
Yeah, it's just this is how it is.
If there were solutions suggested, it would require a hero and a villain.
Yes.
And that is not what this movie is interested in.
Yeah.
This movie, there are no heroes in this movie and there are no villains. It is just people trying to get by and doing what they understand and doing what they feel like they have to do. And you can hate the Parks, but not really.
Yeah.
Like, because like you said, it's not their fault.
They don't know what's going on.
They don't know what they are saved. They are morally saved by their own ignorance. And you could say, well, they should know. They should find out. It's like, well, do you?
Yeah.
Like when you accept a ride from your Uber driver, do you ask him how he's doing?
Yeah.
Do you ask him how his family is? Do you ask him if he's going to be okay? Do you ask him if he needs any more money?
Really good point.
No, of course not. No, no one does. We don't think about it. We don't think about it.
There's also this front that the Kim family is putting up, right? Like, oh yeah, these two kids went to college.
Yeah.
They studied in
Absolutely.
The US.
Yeah.
All of that. So yeah.
There's and that's the other thing is that nobody who's poor like wants everyone to look at them and like pity them and like give them things.
Yeah.
Like, nobody wants that. People want to get by. They want to survive by their own steam. They want to get ahead. What Parasite shows us is a world where it's impossible to win.
Yeah.
And so what do you do? And so the grand question posed by this movie, by any uncomfortable, accurate representation of some reality, is it's asking us the question, well, what now? What does this mean?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? And like, there is not a right answer.
Yeah.
The film does not have an answer for us. We don't have an answer.
It also, that house, like literally that house ends in the exact same position that it began in.
Yeah.
Where we have somebody that's secretly living in the basement and we have a rich family that comes in there.
Yep.
They have a house cleaner. They're not there very often, but they have a house house cleaner that's there all the time.
Yep.
And then we have the poor kid who's like, I'm going to earn a lot of money and come back. And then it ends. It's in the exact same position. After everything that happened, we still are the way that we are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That final sort of fantasy sequence of him imagining earning a bunch of money and going, and it's so beautiful, and then ultimately, like, heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Because you know, and there's it's really it's sort of cruel, actually, the way that the story is written, because he was hit in the head really, really hard. So that you're pretty sure by that point he has brain damage.
Definitely.
So this is the fantasy, not of a sharp, charismatic, hardworking, poor person. This is the fantasy of a boy who has been brain damaged.
Yeah.
And then that's where the movie ends.
Yeah.
And you get to see him smiling in his slum hovel on that, like, the toilet, which is positioned above their heads,
yeah,
by the way.
Oh, that, man. Yeah, I didn't even think about
the
that.
The way the set is constructed, just like, it feels so awful and claustrophobic and, like, demeaning. Just the way their house is put together.
If you want the internet, you got to come squat by the toilet.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. It's so
awful.
Anyway, and so that's where the story ends. And, you know, I mean, it's if you don't want to be the cynical audience member, you can think, well, you know, I believe that he'll do it eventually. It's like, I don't.
Yeah.
Not with the way the world is right now.
And the movie proved, and there was all the conversation about making a plan.
Yeah.
And Mr. Kim's like, the plan never goes. Like, all these people in this gym that are now homeless, they all had plans.
They all had plans.
That, and it, look at where they're at now. Yeah. So it's set up to this make you think he's not going to – that plan ain't going to happen.
The reason I think this movie has been so effective, I mean, it's an incredibly well-made movie. It's incredibly entertaining and suspenseful and wonderful. But it's nihilist, but not in a way that is, like, sort of condescending. It's nihilist because it's representing a reality that is nihilist.
Yeah.
Like, this is the reality for so many people in this world. And it's not to say that there isn't redemption on an individual scales for families. Like, you can be happy and poor. You can have moments of love and genuine connection and sort of salvation as a poor person. It's not that you're doomed to forever, like, burn in hell because you're poor, but there is immense suffering and there's not a way out of it.
Yeah.
For most people.
Yeah.
And so in depicting that reality and being uncompromising in representing that as reality is sort of inevitably nihilist when it comes to the sort of socioeconomic cultural reality that it's representing.
Yeah. I'm very interested to go back and rewatch this movie and kind of think about, you know, what am I being taught? What am I being seen? Have a little more intentional observation and kind of recheck it out.
Yeah.
It's got a lot in it.
I'm excited to return to this one too.
All right.
Okay. Well,
I think that's it. There's more to talk about
always,
especially this movie.
Yeah. Join in the conversation. Send us an email.
Yeah. If there are things you want to talk about,
Facebook,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. We'll have an episode post on this movie. So go and find it and talk about it and we'll get on there and respond.
Absolutely. On Friday, we're going to be covering another, I'm sure will be a very, very deep and challenging culturally relevant movie called The Rhythm Section with...
Are you being sarcastic?
Yes. Yes, I am. But I actually am. Maybe I shouldn't be, but I'm really looking forward to it. So I'm excited to cover that next week with you, CJ.
It's
going to be fun.
Yes.
Blake Lively. Blake Lively being a bad warrior.
Jude Law, right?
Yes. Jude Law.
Yeah, we got some good peeps in there.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
The preview is awesome. It may be a dumb movie, but the preview is so cool. So
and those are two very attractive people.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be fun to watch.
I'll be happy in the theater.
We got an Oscar contest going on.
Yes, we do. Oh, I forgot to talk about it. Earlier, yes, the Oscar contest is currently live. You can go on there. We've had quite a few submissions already, but it's still going. So go to nerdcriticpodcast.com. You'll see a big logo. You're going to press on that logo, and then the next thing that you see is going to be the Oscar contest ballot. We are going to give $100 to the winner.
$100? $10.
So I was going to take that money. I was going to buy you some swag, and I was going to convince you that that swag is cool. But I decided, you know what? You know what's cooler?
Have some cash.
Money.
Yeah.
Money is cooler. So yeah, go enter. It'll close that. That'll close the like midnight on February 8th, the day before the Oscars.
Perfect. And then on this a week from today, Monday, will be our Oscars pre-show.
Yeah.
We'll talk about all of our predictions and all of our excitement and yada yada yada. And then a week after that will be our Oscars post-show. So there's going to be a lot of Oscars conversation that I'm really excited about.
Yeah, which it's a good year for movies. So the Oscars,
such a good year.
Oscars should be great.
Guys, 2019 had a lot of problems, but it was banging in the cinema.
Yeah, banging.
Yeah.
Thank you, Michael Bond-Miller, for the wonderful music that you are hearing now. And we ask that you please remember to collect movies like a nerd and rewatch them like a critic.
And cut.